Song Travels explores the journey singers and songs take together. Support for Song Travels comes from NPR and NPR member stations.
Hi, I'm Michael Feinstein. My guest today is pianist, producer, and songwriter Alan Toussaint. He's one of the leading figures of New Orleans R&B, and he's been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Blues Hall of Fame, and the Songwriters Hall of Fame. His hits include Working in a Coal Mine, Mother-in-Law, Lady Marmalade, and Southern Nights. And with more than 40 years in the music business, he's worked with legendary artists including The Meters, Paul McCartney, The Rolling Stones, Dr. John, Joe Cocker, and Elvis Costello. Since Hurricane Katrina, he's been a musical ambassador for the city of New Orleans. Alan Toussaint, welcome to Song Travels.
Thank you very much.
It's wonderful to be able to speak to you and celebrate your music because you have created a very unusual place in the music business in that you started with a New Orleans heritage that has morphed into mainstream pop music in a way that doesn't always happen. How do you view what has happened in your career? How does it feel from this vantage point looking back to where you started?
It's a wonderful feeling, and I must say that this industry, well, the art world, I'm so glad that it chose me and invited me because music, far as I'm concerned, is the very best industry to be in. There's always somewhere else to go. It's been quite a journey, and stair steps are constant. And it's just always something new on the horizon with as many things as has been done. There's new songs being written as we speak. There's always other places to go. It's a wonderful place to be.
Well, I'd like to get to some music. And you've generously agreed to perform a number of your songs, which is wonderful because for me, there's nothing more exciting than hearing the creator perform their own work. And perhaps we could start with something that is your most covered song.
Well, Get Out of My Life, Woman, I must say that I have learned from a lady named Kathy Sebastian in New Orleans who researches everything that I do, too much that I do. But it's my most covered song, and I must say that it's 5 minutes after I wrote it, I didn't want to really say that, but I was writing it for someone else to sing, so it was okay. But the message just came because it seemed fitting and proper at the moment. But I liked the way it generally went. I wrote it for Lee Darcy originally.
For whom you wrote so many songs.
Oh, I spent a lot of time in and out of the studio with Lee Darcy. We rode motorcycles together, raced Cadillacs, everything. But I wrote Get Out of My Life, Woman for Lee Darcy, and then it was... It did well, but it was covered later by many people, including Devo, which was very interesting. That high-tech thing and quite mechanical, but still soulful, because I was a Devo fan anyway. And it was recorded by many folk, and the biggest hit was by the Grateful Dead, in whom I'm grateful to.
And they've done a number of your songs.
Oh, yes. I love the Grateful Dead, and I'm so glad that they honored me by doing a few of my songs.
Well, let's listen now to you perform this well-known standard, Get Out of My Life, Woman.
Get out my life, woman. You don't love me no more. Get out my life, woman. You don't love me no more. Get out my life, woman. You don't love me no more. Get out my eyes, teardrops, 'cause I've gotta see my way around. Get out my eyes, teardrops, 'cause I've gotta see my way around. Get out my life, heartaches. nothing but heartaches by the pound. Get off my ladder, woman, I've got to climb up to the top. Get off my ladder, woman, I've got to climb up to the top. Get off my ladder, woman, there is nothing gonna make me stop, stop. Get out the way, woman, I've got to be moving on. Get out the way, woman, I've got to be moving on. Get out the way, woman, I've got to be long gone.
That is our wonderful guest, Alan Toussaint, performing his song, Get Out of My Life, Woman. Was that song inspired by an incident or something that happened with Lee Dorsey? Because you said you were reluctant after you wrote it, yet it's your most covered song. So what does that mean?
Well, it might say something about what I think is in and what I should think is in. But no, it wasn't autobiographical or anything like that. It just came because during that period, like many periods, I was writing all day long, and that was just one of the things that came, and it just came so freely. It came to me as if it was written already, and it just had me to transcribe it. And I had an easy, good time writing it, and it was one of those kind where you know when you're finished, because sometimes you get involved writing a song, and you can't take the responsibility of saying it's finished. Mm-hmm. But that one with only three verses said, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you about another song, one of your early hits, your first song to reach number one on the pop and R&B chart, which is Mother-in-Law. And I remember hearing that song when I was a kid, and I fell in love with it. There was something infectious, and I think a big part of it was the bass. So how did that come about? I'm sure you've recounted the story, but I don't know how it was created.
Well, I wrote the song for Ernie Cato to sing, and he sang the lead. And I used the backup singers, of course, one being Benny Spellman, who sang that low voice, the mother-in-law line.
Now, was he the guy who always did low parts on other records or no?
Well, that was the first one he did his low voice. He's a baritone singer, and he loved his baritone voice. I mean, he even talked that way. And but he did that part well. And of course we had two other guys singing the upper parts and Cato, of course, singing the lead. But Benny Spellman did a wonderful job on that line. And when it became a hit, number one in the R&B charts, Benny Spellman convinced everyone that he come in contact with and me that the only reason why Mother-in-Law hit at all was because of his line, the way he sung Mother-in-Law. And I heard it daily that that was the case. And when he'd do his own gigs, he'd do all of the radio songs, but he'd certainly, the star of the show was when he'd sang his Mother-in-Law and let everyone in the world know that he did that.
Well, let's listen to part of Mother-in-Law, the first big hit for our guest, Alan Toussaint.
Mother-in-Law,
Mother-in-Law.
She worried me so. Mother-in-law,
mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law. See, it's impossible to say those words without thinking of the music, which is one of the exciting things, I imagine, as a songwriter, that you find that combination. How does it come to you, words, music, simultaneously separate? What is the process for you, if there is one?
Well, when I'm writing a vocal song, the music and the words come at the same time.
Really?
As opposed to a story, and then you turn it to music, which would be a luxury, because someone from time to time later on has given me a set of lyrics and say, see what you can do with this, which is really nice. But when I'm writing myself, the lyrics come at the same time. And the whole song doesn't come at once these days, but in earlier days it used to, because the artist was sitting right there. In my parents' front room, it would be Irma Thomas, Aaron Neville, Chris Kenner, all sitting right there.
Mm.
So I'd write a song for Irma, teach it to her. She would go in the next room by herself and practice by herself after I showed her how it goes. Then I would write one for Aaron. Irma would come back. Aaron would go in that room, and we'd go over it with Irma, and then I'd write one for Benny. So it was like a little factory there. So I was really cranking them out, and it had to be complete at that moment. Nowadays, not that it's for the better or for the worse, but I have more time because I don't operate exactly like that. But if I'm writing for an artist, I do write for that artist all the time.
Sometimes a song can be interpreted in a very different way, as you have experienced with many of your songs through the years. Listening to With You in Mind, that can be a love song or that can be a religious song. How was it created?
I wrote it for Frankie Miller, who's a guy from Scotland, with sandy hair and very Scottish with that strong accent. And when he sang, he sounded like he's from the Delta. That was quite a dichotomy to hear this guy sing. It just inspired me so much. I wrote many songs for him even after I wouldn't be recording him anymore. His voice was still hanging with me.
Well, would you perform With You in Mind?
Sure, I would love to. With you in mind, things just ain't bad as they seem. With you in mind, well, I can build my wildest dream. With you in mind, I can do anything, I know I can. With you in mind, honey, with you in mind. With you in mind, I went out looking for the best. With you in mind, 'cause you deserve nothing less. With you in mind, I've done so many things loving you brings. With you in mind, honey, with you in mind. It's like a flower drinking from the falling rain, the same rain that could wash it away. Instead, it gives it strength and gives it water and before you know, another day
with you in mind. I'll climb the mountain to the top with you in mind. I know love's fountain will not stop with you in mind. I can do anything, I know I can, with you in mind. Honey, with you in mind, with you in mind. Honey, with you in mind.
That is With You in Mind, performed by our guest, Alan Toussaint. Your background, you were born in New Orleans, and was your family musical, your parents musical?
Well, my father was a trumpet player in a big band before I was born.
What kind of band?
A big band that played big dances in clubs in New Orleans, played swing.
Swing, that's what I was curious, because there's so many different kinds of bands.
Then. You're right. But he played strictly off the page. He knew nothing of improvision. However, by the time I came along, I was the youngest of three children. To raise his family, he couldn't make a living at the trumpet. So by the time I came along, as I say, he had taken a job on a railroad, which he was a railroad mechanic during the locomotive days. Mm. And he did what his father did before him, an extremely wonderful mechanic on these huge engines. And when I was a boy, he would take me over there and let me look around the engines and see every working part of the locomotives. But he was a trumpet player on the page, and I make that a point because that can be a different life. No improvisation at all. My mother didn't play anything, but she loved classical music. And she loved classical music, and I used to hear it on Sunday. She would play classical music on the radio. She'd play these grand operas and these huge symphonies, and I just loved that dearly, but I was already a cat. I wasn't about to be that, but I couldn't help but respect and love that, and I thought, well, since I'm learning to play the piano, whenever I heard a piano playing, I thought all piano players could play that except me, so I better get to it. So even if I heard Grace Piano Concerto or a Wayne Cain or Strauss or anything, Debussy, I always approach it, and I picked it out in my humble way of playing because I had no classical training. So I was always haunted by the classical world, and I still respect it so highly. However, you're asking about my family and music. My sister, the piano was sent to the house for her to play. And we were in a very humble neighborhood and very humble life. But my aunt had a piano that she wasn't using and thought it was ritzy for a young lady to play the piano or violin. So she sent it to my house for my sister to play. And my sister began taking music lessons. And she had a teacher that spanked her hands. Oh. So she wanted no part of that. After a few lessons or a few weeks, she was through with it. But she was a smart girl, and she saw me picking out little melodies. She was 8 years older than I. She saw me picking out little melodies, what I heard on the radio and here and there, and when I heard her practice. And she was the first one to tell me, this E that you're playing here is there on the page, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So though her lessons were short-lived, I understand now that she got just enough to get me started in the theoretical part of it as well.
And so you learned to read music. Were there any subsequent lessons? Or?
Well, I took about 8 lessons in my life as a boy, but the Boogie Woogies had me already. I didn't practice my Gertrude and Elizabeth as I should have Bill Garland's Goat, you know? And my mother, after about 8 lessons, and they were very inexpensive, but to her it wasn't inexpensive at that time. She gave up on me, and she may as well, because
Pine Top Boogie Woogie was hanging in.
Meet Lux Lewis.
And oh, good.
Albert Ammons. And...
Ammons, please.
Yeah.
When you say Ammons, I want to go that way for a while.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and some blues. So my mother saw that and she went on with me, but she was a supporter of what I was doing. When company would come, she'd call the little boy out for me. I'd come out and play for the company. And I had a wonderful time with the piano as a child. I'd wake up in the morning for the piano.
Mm. So much comes from the piano. And of course, when I think of blues, I don't think of singers, I think of the piano.
Okay, yeah.
Now, the Brickyard Blues, that's a humorous kind of blues. Mm. And it's interesting to me because when I first learned about blues as a kid, when you're taught we were taught in junior high school about what the blues are, there's a lot of humor in the blues. And as at first, I thought blues are just sort of somber, but blues are not always about lament.
Yeah, that's right.
So Brickyard Blues is something that's got some delicious illusions in it. I wrote Monkey that, and Jello. And
oh, yeah. I wrote that for Frankie Miller again, as I said. Yes. And it was Ed Bradley's favorite song. And I don't know if he ever knew the name, but he'd say, play that song for me where you say, you talk to yourself, you say, I said to myself and myself said something.
Right.
I'd say, okay, yeah, and I knew what he was talking about.
Would you play it for us now?
Sure.
The Brickyard Blues by our guest Alan Toussaint.
Well, I tried to run my game. She said, man, that's the same old thing I've heard before. And I'm too tired to go for your show again and again. And she started to explain. She said, man, I ain't saying what you're playing just can't make it. But I just can't take it anymore. Play something sweet. Play something mellow. Play something I can sink my teeth in like jello. Play something I can understand. Play me some Brickyard Blues. Play something sweet. Now make it funky. Just make me lay back and grin like a monkey. Play something I can understand. Play me some Brickyard Blues. Well, I started to sweat. She said, don't get upset, 'cause you just might break a string. And that won't do a thing for your show, don't you know? So I said to myself, I said, self, do you see what is sailing through my soul? And I got to have some more, don't you know? Play something sweet, play something mellow. Play something I can sink my teeth in like jello. Play something I can understand. Play me some Brickyard Blues. Play something sweet. Now make it funky. Just make me lay back and grin like a monkey. Play something I can understand. Play me some Brickyard Blues. Well. It's enough to make a light in the dark. It's enough to make a bite, just a bark. It's enough to make a body move around. It's enough to make a bulldog hug a hound. Play something sweet, play something mellow. Play something I can sink my teeth in like jello. Play something I can understand. Play me some Brickyard Blues.
All right. That is Brickyard Blues. And there's more coming up in a moment with producer Alan Toussaint. I'm Michael Feinstein, and this is Song Travels from NPR Music. There's a song that the Pointer Sisters sang, Yes We Can, that I first knew it through that recording. But again, that's something you had created earlier.
I wrote that for Lee Dorsey.
Again, Lee Dorsey. Yes.
Lee Dorsey.
Yeah.
And we had a good time with it. It's one of the things that I actually played guitar on. I played the simple guitar. Leo Nosenteller played the complex, funky guitar. Later on, it was covered, a marvelous cover by the Pointer Sisters, who did some other things of mine. Happiness, they recorded.
Now, did you produce the Pointer Sisters' recording of it?
I did not produce it. They had a producer out there who, he really enjoyed much of my material, I'm glad to say. He did a wonderful job. It was Planet Records. No, I never did produce them or perform with them, but I love what they did
with
my songs.
Would you perform Yes We Can, Ken?
Sure would.
Here it is, performed by the composer, Alan Toussaint, Yes We Can.
Now's the time for all good men to get together with one another. I'm not the problems and I'm not the quarrels, and try to live as brothers and try to find peace within without stepping on one another. And do respect the women of the world, just remember we all had mothers, and make this land a better land and a world in which we live, and help each man be a better man with the kindness that you give. And I know we can make it, I know done well, we can work it out. Yes, we can, I know we can. Yes, we can. Why can't we if we want to? Yes, we can. I know we can make it work. I know we can make it if we try. Take care of the children of the world. They're our strongest hope for the future, the little bitty boys and girls. And make this land a better land and a world in which we live, and help each man be a better man with the kindness that you give. And I know we can make it, I know done well, we can work it out. Yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Why can't we if we want to? Yes we can. I know we can make it work, I know we can make it if we try. Yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Great God Almighty, yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Why can't we if we want to? Yes we can. Yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Great God Almighty, yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can. Why can't we if we want? Yes, we can. Yes, we can. I know we can. Yes, we can. Great God, Almighty. Yes, we can. I know we can.
That's Yes, We Can. There's a song that you wrote that has become important for many people, Freedom for the Stallion, for what it expresses, a song that will touch the hearts of people in any time, anywhere, because of its universal message. Where did that message come from?
Freedom for the Stallion. I never think of myself as a fist wave or anything political at all, not the slightest bit. I'm not ever angry at either side of the political world or whatever ideas, because I think controversy is good. Whoever is in office at the time, that's my guy. I don't know why I wrote Freedom for the Stallion, but there must be some part of me that is involved that I don't know about. And I just surrender to that without fighting it. But the same guy who wrote Freedom for the Stallion also wrote Yes, We Can Can. Mm-hmm. I do know that.
Do you find yourself in the song, though? I mean, do you say, that's me?
I'm all right with it. I'm mm-hmm. all right with it. Yeah, like I say, I don't fight it. But I didn't write it because I had something I wanted to tell the world off or tell some adversary off about. I just don't feel like that.
Would you perform it for us?
Yes.
Freedom for the Stallion by our guest, Alan Toussaint.
Freedom for the Stallion. Freedom for the mare and her coat. Freedom for the baby child who has not grown old enough to vote. Lord have mercy, what you gonna do about the people who are praying to you? Men making laws that destroy other men. They've made money God, and it's a doggone sin. Oh Lord, you got to help us find a way. Big ships are sailing, slaves all chained and bound, heading for a brand new land that some cat said he just up then found. Lord have mercy, what you gonna do about the people who are praying to you? They got men building fences, keeping other men out. Ignore him if he whisper and kill him if he shout. Oh Lord, you got to help us find a way. Everybody's gonna be free, even the little people, the little bitty folk like John and me. Lord have mercy, when has it come true? When will that dream come true? When I look inside my mind, searching for the truth I find. Oh Lord, you got to help us find a way. Lord, you got to help us find a way.
That was Freedom for the Stallion, performed by our guest, Alan Toussaint. You've written so many different kinds of songs, and I guess in some ways the polar opposite of something as deeply resonant as Freedom for the Stallion. Or should I say, different in the sense that this is another kind of resonance, to go from that into Whipped Cream, which is a more whimsical creation. That certainly shows off very different sides of your personality.
Well, I must say so. And in fact, I use a pseudonym when I wrote Whipped Cream.
Oh, that's right. That was your mother's name?
My mother's maiden name. Right.
Why was that?
Well, it was time to change companies.
Publishing companies?
Publishing companies. And I was even going to change record companies soon thereafter. So to keep moving through that period while they're negotiating all those moves, I use a pseudonym so I could keep on writing. And I wrote Whipped Cream under that name. And I must say, after a while, there were songs that when I was writing, I could know that this is a Naomi Neville's song. This is not an Alan Toussaint song. But that's how Whipped Cream came along. And then it was covered by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. And it became the original theme song for the original Dating Game.
I remember it so well,
okay.
And I still have those images. When I hear that music, it's immediate sense memory, and I see that show and the whole thing.
Funny thing happened. It was on for quite a while, an enjoyable while, because I used to like to hear it. In fact, I was invited on that show, but I didn't go on because of reasons of, I don't know how you do that with girlfriends and all of that.
Right.
What do you tell the girlfriend at home? But anyway, after a while, they wrote another song that goes like that, and they shifted it into place of Whipped Cream. And so that's why I always refer to it as the original theme song, because later on there was another one that is in that mode.
I don't remember another one. I don't think anyone else does.
Okay. Well,
I
won't deal with that.
Well, let's listen to part of the Herb Alpert recording of Whipped Cream. I think the album was called Whipped Cream and Other Delights. Is that correct?
Beautiful cover.
Yes. That's Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass performing Whipped Cream. As a result of your performing over the last many years, much more visibly and more vociferously, if I can say, your most recent project is one that captures you live in performance in New York. And it's not only a CD, but a DVD. How does it feel to perform live at this point?
For me to perform live, to get on stage and perform front stage center was quite trying for me.
Trying, yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I'm very uncomfortable, very uncomfortable. Because when in recording artists and being inspired by artists, I dearly appreciate artists who live and breathe for the stage. I can tell that this person loves what they do as much as I love what I do. So I'm going to do this well. They do that really well. Yeah. But that's a different thing.
Right.
And now I'm doing that. But I never considered that I was worthy because I hadn't put in the time that I would think deserved the respect that I should give to that. So it was on-the-job training, you might say. But I'm still not at that level that, and I may never be at that level that I would expect an artist to be and to feel and to love and to feel all that it should feel when you go out to that front stage center. And everybody's looking at you in particular, and what you're about to say is what they're there for, and that's that. That's a biggie.
That's a biggie.
But I must say that has been very rewarding, and it's something about how audience feedback, even when they're quiet, you feel something going on that's very good for you. Because I really firmly believe that this is what this thing was all about. The performer and the audience being there at the same time. We came up with these devices called studios and all of that. But the meat of the matter is, I'm singing, and there you are. And there you are, and here I am. That is about as good as it gets. And that's the real as it can be. So I respect that highly. And being on stage, I don't only see it theoretically, but I feel the meat of it.
You wrote a song that is included in your newest project in the live CD and DVD about New York. Would you perform that song?
I sure would. I love New York, and if I would think if the alien beings should come like people say they do, they should not land out in Wiccan's Eye where they should come to New York.
They could very well be here. We wouldn't even notice them. Well, here's this wonderful ode to Manhattan by our guest Alan Toussaint called No Place Like New York.
I've been many places around the world. Some very nice, some not nice at all. All sorts of people in strange little steeples. They all had something of their own. Tokyo was crowded. Everything worked neat and nice. Lace in the taxi cabs, nothing drab. And they were so polite. Rome has its Colosseum. The French ivory towers, no dog at all. Everywhere had their bragging rights. From hell to paradise. But you can walk your walk, you can talk your talk. But there's just no place like New York. You can roll and waller, you can scream and holler. But there's just no place like New York. New Orleans has its old world charm, and that's where I intend to live and die. Where music creeps right up through the streets under the southern sky. But when it comes to the big picture, where nations of the world come to chat, when they get through doing business, they don't want to go home. Make you want to tell them scat. Well, you can walk your walk, you can talk your talk, but there's just no place like New York. You can roll and holler, you can scream and holler, but there's just no place like New York. You can walk your walk, you can pop your corks, but there's just no place like New York.
That's No Place Like New York. I love the way you have a little quote of New York, New York in there. And the humor, I think you've captured something about the city that is special. So thank you for that.
I've written other songs about New York. New York is loaded, just loaded. You could stand on the corner and the world languages and the world feelings, the world odors, everything can pass you by on any given corner.
Any other city compare to that to you, compared to New York?
No.
I mean, London or...
No. And they all have their thing. They all have their bragging rights, but no place like New York.
One of the things that you do in your performances is an improvisation that is something that is off the cuff, whatever you're feeling at the moment. And I'd love it if you would consider doing that for us now, because it, I think, will give us an insight into your subconscious of that mighty musical mind.
Let's see what we get.
Here it is, an improvisation by Alan Toussaint. Thank you. Well, that's really something, that improvisation. Here's what I noted as you were doing it. A little bit of An American in Paris, the trolley song, Richard Rodgers, Slaughter on 10th Avenue, Chattanooga Choo Choo, Nola, Edelweiss, I heard some Floyd Kramer. Was that My Coloring Book? Rondo a la Turk. March Militaire.
You're a little young to know all of that.
Oh, I know them. And you ended with Good Evening, Friends. Wow. Does the fact that you're doing that in front of an audience, does that make it more or less comfortable to do something like that?
Not in front of an audience. It's more uncomfortable to do it in a studio.
Okay.
Because the audience hears it that one time.
Right, okay.
Hears it that one time. But, well, I answered that.
Well, I only heard it once, so. Okay. Well, I think a nice way to bring this all together is by finishing with a song that is perhaps your best-known song. It's a song that is an ode to your heritage and your upbringing called, some people know it as Southern Nights or Southern Night, I think, as it was written.
My original title was Southern Nights Singular, but it turned out to be later Southern Nights for everybody else, so I say Southern Nights as well. And I don't consider that the best song I've ever written, but I do consider it my signature song.
Well, then please avail us. Southern Nights.
Its precious beauty to lie deep beyond the eye, and it goes rushing through your soul like the stories told aboard. Oh man, he and his dog, they walked the whole land. Every flower touched his cold hand. As he slowly walked by, the weeping willow would cry for joy. They would cry for joy, joy, joy. Mysteries like this and many others in the tree, they all blow in the night, in the southern sky, in the southern sky.
flower touched his cold hand. As he slowly walked by, the weeping willow would cry for joy. They would cry for joy. Mysteries like this and many others in the trees, they all blew in the night in the southern skies. In the southern skies.
That is Southern Nights, performed by the prodigiously talented Alan Toussaint. Alan Toussaint, thank you for the years of inspiration. Please never stop writing, because we need you. It's been a great pleasure having you as a guest on Song Travels.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Song Travels with host Michael Feinstein and his guest Alan Toussaint. Song Travels is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio and is recorded at Hirsch Studios in New York City, with post-production in the Elaine T. Freeman Suite at ETV Radio in Columbia, South Carolina. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Andrew Shire, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager Grant Jackson, production assistant Laura Hunsberger. The executive producer is Kobe Hennessy. The executive in charge is Linda O'Brien. Special thanks to Anya Grundman, director and executive producer of NPR Music. We love to hear from you. Our email address is songtravels@scetv.org. Our postal address is ETV Radio, 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Support for Song Travels comes from NPR and NPR member stations. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, helping people build measurably better lives, on the web at hewlett.org, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, recognizing exceptionally creative individuals. This year's MacArthur Fellows are at macfound.org. This is NPR.